I think that people's motivations have changed. I think the way they look at life and what's important has changed. I think the time that people spend commuting feels like it's a choice that they may or may not want to make. And it's all unfolding.
As an employer, your business depends on your staff. They are the backbone of your company. But because you face unique challenges managing your team, you need to have the right resources. On this podcast, industry expert Alex Atwood tackles it all so you don't have to.
So today I'm excited to be talking to an executive coach, a motivator, a cultural change expert, but most importantly, a dear friend of mine and a heart-led executive coach, Dr. MJ Jarius. Now, MJ started his coaching career 20 years ago. And during that time, he found a specialty in working with the country's top level executives, helping them to better build group dynamics and peer-to-peer relationships. And an interesting fact is that Fortune magazine recently voted two of MJ's coaching clients to their list of the nation's 50 most powerful executives. So I'm sure we can glean a lot today from MJ and some of his experience advising some of the top level executives in the country. So thank you so much for joining us, MJ. So tell me, what are some of your earliest memories growing up? And what were some things that you really got excited about early on?
Yeah, we're going way back, huh?
We're going way back in the
time. We're going way back, yeah. I guess part of what I remember growing up is always enjoying playing, creating, looking at different ways of doing things, whether it's playing in the yard or doing things at home. So, and early on, one of the things I was drawn to was music. So I remember as a young kid, I want to be like that. That was cool. And I was a young kid when the Monkees came up. I wish it was the Beatles. I wish I liked the Beatles, but the Monkees were on TV and it's like, wow, that's cool. And then it's wanted to be the guitar player. And so early on, it was like how to play, how to create, and wanted to understand how to engage in the world in a more creative way.
Yeah. So the Monkees gave you that creative inspiration. You know, I'm with you that the Monkees were an inspiration to me too. Their TV show was on syndication. So they had the personalities that went along with it and they were a little bit more consumable at the time to someone my age. So I share that with you. So you started playing, you said you wanted to be like Mike Nesmith, right? The guitarist.
Yeah, right. He was the only guy that was actually a player, I think, in the band. So somehow it's like a guy that really could play. And so I just loved the guitar since I was a little kid and then started playing as I got into my teens and that kind of set a course of action. So I played in jazz band in high school and improv bands, which led to meeting some musicians, which led to playing in high school and then college. And then we made a couple albums and toured the country. So it was something that started out as fun and turned into something that was awesome. So
wow. So you're not the first person to be inspired to want to play music. And something in you allowed you to be able to not only be inspired, but for you to take that inspiration and turn it into actually touring the country. So that's pretty remarkable. Tell me about how that sort of musician life transitioned into being trained as a psychologist. Like, where did those two sort of live? Tell me a little bit about that.
So as a musician, and even though we were mildly successful and a couple records and doing things, it's still I had lots of side jobs to support my music habit, right? Because it's like tough to make a living playing music. So did lots of different things from everyone's a waiter if you're a musician, but also worked in commercials, all different things. And one of the things I got interested in through a friend was massage therapy. And I became a licensed massage therapist. And it was interesting work, cool work. And seeing people over time, they would come back kind of body armor with, they'd have an armor in a particular way you help to organize and re-energize. And then they'd come back with the same re-armored up again. And maybe it'd be interesting. The band broke up. I didn't know what to do. And I'm like, this mind-body connection, maybe it'd be interesting to work on the cause of the armoring versus just treat the symptoms, which is the armor. So I'm like looking at kind of health psychology and the mind-body connection that led me back to school and ended up getting a master's and doctorate in health psychology and clinical psychology.
That is fascinating. So what age were you when you decided that you wanted to strip away the armor and you wanted to dig a little bit deeper into the psychology? How old were you when you did that?
I went back to grad school at 33. and I got my license when I was 40. So this was later in life.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
So at the core of all this, you're a musician and you've taken anything but a straightforward traditional career path in terms of how you got to where you are. So let's talk a little bit about once you got through grad school and you had your doctorate, what did it feel like when you were now a psychologist? And what did that feel like as opposed to being a musician? Because to a listener or to me, that sounds like a massive pivot. That sounds like an entirely different lifestyle. And so how did that feel? And how did you take on being a psychologist?
It was a lot of, you didn't have to carry as much gear and it wasn't as loud. So let's start with that. So probably preserved my hearing, right? But in some ways, it was more in the service of. So I think as a musician, you are in the service of the song and service of creating, but it's more as a way of energizing and entertaining a crowd. And as a therapist, which then quickly evolved into being an executive coach, it was, I'm here to serve you, but it's a different situation. Have to listen differently. As a therapist, it's very intimate experience. And a lot of it is looking back at the past and what's getting in the way of you moving forward. As a coach, it's much more about where are you and where do you want to go? And it's not as much about excavating the past to move forward, but you acknowledge some of that, but it's more, what do you want to create and help people to do that?
Mm. And was there something specific that had you decide to be a coach? Was there a specific event where things changed for you and you decided that was the path you wanted to take?
Yeah, it was serendipitous. And I was doing a lot of things. In graduate school, you figure out a lot of what's wrong with people, at least when I was going to graduate school. And I kept asking professors, how do you help people get better? And they're like, oh, it just happens. So I was doing other things. I was studying Eastern religion. I did some landmark stuff, which I know that you're a part of, right? Or you have been a
Absolutely,
part of.
Absolutely, yeah.
And met a guy at a landmark course and we were paired up and I'm like, I quickly learned sitting with people in their pain as a therapist all the time is a little depressing and great work, loved it. But I also wanted to do something that felt freer, could impact larger systems and really wanted to have a bigger impact. And if you're working with a system, you could have a bigger impact. And this guy, I wanted to do some stress management stuff. I was in health psychology looking at the mind-body connection. And he said, hey, I need someone to do some stress management workshops, very serendipitous. He also had a program that was looking at family, at health. He got a trainer and there was an executive coaching portion. So he asked if I could help with that and do some work with him delivering that. And the coaching piece is the one I was most interested in. So serendipitous, it was, I wanted something that was more freer to create, have a bigger impact. Early on, I set the goal of I want to work with leaders, even though I had never been, I never worked in business a day in my life. You know what I mean? I've never really had a boss, but I felt like I may be able to bring this creative way of looking at systems. And whether it was massage therapy or music, I was very good at like laying my hands on a massage therapist and like figuring out what was needed. And I think that understanding of systems and almost intuiting what's needed helped to serve me as an executive coach. And early on, people said, you're really good at this, even though I didn't understand business. So I was helping people to evolve as leaders, not understanding the system stuff as much as I do today. And I think I'm a much better coach today because I understand the system and situational awareness. Mm-hmm. But my intuition was good back then. So yeah. That was kind of the... It's like, why not work with leaders? They're having the biggest impact. And so I kind of took a leap and I somehow made it work.
Yeah. There's a certain freedom in the way you describe how you take on these new paths and these new journeys. It occurs to me that you don't really have any expectations as you sort of move into these territories that you have absolutely no experience in. And that allows you to be able to work so well without that expectation and with that sort of freedom in how you're going into that. So that's pretty inspiring as I'm hearing you talk about this. Now, so you had this sort of chance encounter and that led to a workshop and you decided at that point that you wanted to work with leadership. So how long after making that choice to work with leaders and to take your career in that direction, did you actually start working with some top level executives, some people that really had influence in terms of with large corporations?
Yeah, I would say there was maybe a year or of learning the program, doing some, I think I did some coaching on the front end. And then the guy was like, well, see if you can sell this, right? You know, see if you can find some clients. And at the time lived in Chicago in this townhome development. And there was a guy across the way and they traveled a lot and we'd only see him in the courtyard. Hey, how you doing? And he asked me, would you take care of our cat this weekend? And I'm like, and literally it was like 30 feet. Our doors kind of were, I'm like, sure. You know what I mean? So I took care of his cat. And when he came back, he's like, you're the only person that the cat has eaten. Would you mind taking care of our cats when I'm gone? I'm like, sure. It's no big deal. Right. And this guy worked at Ernst & Young. And then after I had taken care of his cats two or three times, he said, what do you do? And I told him about this program. He's like, well, let me introduce you into Ernst & Young and I'll teach HR. And this, no, I'll actually get you with the head of HR. And so I met with this guy the first time it was my first pitch. And the guy that started the program was there. And the guy said, I like you. You seem like energetic and sounds interesting. Cut the rate in half. We'll do it for 50%, you know, half of the program. And if I like it, I'll introduce it into the company. And so I worked with this guy and it worked out great. He introduced us into Ernst & Young. So I was able to enroll him in the idea that this could be a value and then was able to deliver that the value was greater than he thought. And then that was the first client. And then that led to some other ones. So it was very early on. I was kind of thrown in the deep end and figure out how to do it. So, and I think part of the reason that I was able to do that is because I've always been a student, no matter what it is. Student of guitar, student of people, student of systems, as a psychologist studying different dynamics. And I was always thinking of understanding not the pathology, but how to use what gets in the way for people to thrive. So I did a lot of study and didn't just show up and wing it, but I didn't have the depth of knowledge to understand business and some of the challenges and opportunities that are inherent in different businesses.
So let's pivot a little bit more to present day. So you're now working with top level executives and you have clients that you advise on how to build teams and how to build peer-to-peer relationships and sort of the social structures and the culture within companies. And we just went through this massive shift with the pandemic, going to remote work and finding ways to engage. And actually generations now, they don't necessarily stick with the same employers or have the same motivations that Gen X had or the millennials even had. I mean, now we're working through Gen Z. So what do you find yourself, what advice do you find yourself giving to leaderships more now than you did maybe prior to the pandemic, or if anything?
Yeah, good question. Well, I think this is here to stay. Right, that there is a way that hybrid work will be forever, depending on certain situations. Manufacturing, you still got to be in the plan if you're manufacturing, but there's a lot of workers that will be virtual. I think figure out how to be engaging in this format. I do a lot of virtual whiteboarding. So when I'm coaching, we're very small and the ideas are very big. So find a way to engage people in this medium. I think another thing is people have been much more focused on themselves. Is I'm looking at you right now, but I kind of see me. I've seen myself more in the last year and a half than I've probably seen myself in the last two decades. And I think that people are in the conversation because they're somehow seeing themselves differently. I don't know how that's going to evolve. So I think that people's motivations have changed. I think people, the way they look at life and what's important has changed. I think the time that people spend commuting feels like it's a choice that they may or may not want to make. And it's all unfolding. I know that it's about as hard as it's ever been to run companies right now. So, and a lot of the leaders I'm working with, it's not easy right now. And even though most did well through COVID, unless certain industries got beat up, if you're in the hospitality or travel industries, but a lot did well and they realized they could do this, they could work virtually, but it just keeps evolving. And COVID doesn't make it easier as well. Or the supply chain, those things are crazy hard.
Oh yeah, crazy hard. It's like you said, it's evolving. And I think the connection to the purpose, maybe, or the mission of the business, or even the connection to your colleagues, to people that you work with in and around. The struggle that I found is like maintaining that level of connection and engagement as things are just sort of moving in all these different directions. Mm-hmm. So is there anything specific that you've seen work that maybe some of your clients have put into place, or anything that you're seeing that's sort of coming on the horizon that seems to be sort of a new method that's helping?
In terms of in the virtual world?
In the virtual world, right. Well, you mentioned that people, they see each other, literally they see their faces more often because they're on these Zoom calls.
Yeah.
Right. And so my question is there actually like a benefit in having people maybe have more meetings now? You're seeing people more. Maybe you're connecting with those across the country or across the world a little bit more because there's a comfort level around being able to engage remotely. Have you seen anything like that? Have you seen any like anything happen in terms of positives there, or maybe not?
Yeah. Well, I think people are. I talked to a guy that's running an ad agency this morning, and he said yesterday was the first day he worked from home in like the last 3 weeks. And he got more done. He's gotten done in 3 weeks. Right? So there is a way that when people are not distracted by things other than meetings they're in, they can get a lot of work done.
Yeah.
So I would say people can create their own world somewhat. I think targeting meetings, if it's an hour meeting, see if you can get it done in 45 minutes is something. I think that just a lot of people, if cameras are off, people are multitasking and they're probably not paying attention. I think breakout rooms are really good. I think, as I said, virtual whiteboarding has been the most, especially in a lot of the one-on-one or team stuff. We're talking about ideas and the ideas are much bigger. So it's engaging for people to talk about ideas and not just talk to each other. And it's a little less personal. The challenge for me is I'm trapped. I can't move very much. So there's a way where we're just sedentary that's different than even if you're working in the office. So that's a challenge, is how do you stay nimble and feel vital when you're just trapped staring at a camera? So
yeah,
I think there's benefits. I think it's great for work-life balance. I think people can work from anywhere. And there's some challenges as well, of course.
Yeah. So what I heard, that there's a bit more freedom there in terms of being able to build the structures around your particular life that may work, right?
Yeah.
And so maybe if you're spending a certain amount of time commuting back and forth to work, and then you're by a coffee cooler and all of that, sometimes you don't necessarily have as much freedom to control how you're spending your day. So maybe some of that's shown up in the way things are working. Yeah. So that's great. So one thing about you, MJ, that I know already, and I'm learning more and more as I'm learning about your background, is that you seem to take things on and not want to sort of continue down a path that you're no longer like that excited about. I know you're excited about music and being an artist, and you went into massage therapy and you said, okay, I want to explore this a little bit more. I want to break down the body armor. So then you went and got trained as a psychologist, and then you started to really feel into working in the social dynamics and working with leadership and change management organizations and all that. So now where you are today, what are you doing that's sort of the next phase for MJ? So in terms of your career, in terms of like how you're relating to your clients or anything, what's the next big thing that MJ's moving towards and expanding into?
It's a bit of a leading question. Yeah, right. Exactly. So about 2 years ago, I was a little bored, and not that I love the work I do and I feel fortunate, but it's like I was looking for something. So I purposely stopped trying to build business and all these things. And I just was listening. And I'm like, what is there out there that is kind of a next thing for me? And I saw something on 60 Minutes, Michael Pollan, and he had written a book, How to Change Your Mind. And there was this, and stepping back as a psychologist, I've always been into neuropsych and understanding neurotransmitters and how the brain works. And it's as much understood as it's more of a mystery. But there are, with fMRIs and other technologies, they're getting better and better at it. And saw this image of the brain, which is normally how it functions, which is we channel information into what we know and we keep confirming what we know. And we don't like to learn. The brain, it actually hurts the brain to change. And then there was an image of the brain on psilocybin, which was the plant medicine, which looks at how do you turn off certain parts of the brain and allow other things to happen. And I was like, wow, I want that image on the right. It just looks super colorful. And just like, that's interesting. So it was about a year and a half of doing a ton of study, looking at all the research. There's a lot of compelling research. And there was an article in Newsweek, the cover of Newsweek, about a month or two ago that said psilocybin may be the biggest breakthrough in the mental health field since Prozac, SSRIs, which treat the symptoms, but do not help people necessarily deal with some of the underlying causes and what's motivating, which a lot of it is just brain activity. So these treatments are causing permanent change and rewiring of the brain. And I'm like, wow, this is freaking cool. And I'm not looking at this necessarily for the mental health field. I'm more in the field of helping people see what's possible and transformation and evolving as an adult. And I'm at that point in my career. I was also looking in the mirror. Maybe I was just looking at Zoom, right? You know, it's like,
you know, which is basically the mirror.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And it's like, as I'm getting to kind of retirement age, you know, what are the things that feel generative? How do I have more meaning? What are the things that feel exciting and empowering for me? And I know other people are getting to this life stage and they're like, now what? And so I originally thought that this could be a way of opening up people to possibilities, where it's generally people have experiences where they feel more connected to something greater than themselves. The ego is let down and they're more into a sense of a communal energy, and there's more connectivity and all those things amongst people. And that felt like that could be a cool place to explore. So I'm really excited. I met you through a program that we both got certified as coaches in these modalities, trying to figure out with the legal landscape how to do this in a way that is responsible, respectful of the limits that the law provides, which are still there, and create safe environments for people to have these experiences where they see what could be possible for them in a way that is, it's hard to experience if you haven't experienced those. And then probably the secret sauce is, once I've experienced it, how to integrate it into my life, your life, in a way where it feels like not just this dream that I had this amazing weekend, but it's actually something that is helping me to align my life around different things that feel more generative and positive and growth promoting in my own life.
Yeah, that's fascinating. It's exciting. Do you plan to bring some of this work to your existing client base in any form or fashion? Do you see that happening? Yeah.
There's two paths that I'm looking at. And one is kind of a for leaders, which would be more kind of a YPO model, where there's a group, an ongoing group experience that could have different experiential elements to it. So people would go away, potentially have experiences that open up their mind in new ways of looking at things. And then a group of leaders talking about, with this access to new possibilities, how do we integrate that into leading companies? So that's one area, and I have no idea. Build it and they will come. We'll see. It seems like for CEOs that want to think differently, this could be a great portal, both with a community and using these experiences. And then another one that would just be for more people who are very healthy, living a good life and want to have more. And those would be some experiences through the course of a year, and offer those here and there. So, But at this point for me, it's more learning about how to foster experiences than necessarily putting a lot of experiences out there. Yeah. And also the legal landscape, it's something that I'm very aware of.
Yeah, for sure. Well, first of all, psychedelics, and we met through the Third Wave Psychedelic Coaching Program. And it's interesting because if you look at sort of the, what they call it, maybe it's the second wave, but the 1960s, sort of early on and mid 60s, prior to the government getting involved in all of the restrictions that were put around psychedelics, you find that there was so much creativity happening then. And if you look at, and I'm just going to sort of put a hypothesis out there, but if you look at Palo Alto, California, if you look at San Francisco, California, if you look at where the sort of cultural epicenter was of the counterculture and of where a lot of experimentation was happening with psychedelics in those times, that sort of creativity, that sort of out-of-the-box thinking, that imagination that eventually manifested itself, I would say, into possibly some of what we have technology-wise. I mean, I would say it's no coincidence that technology and creativity are melded here. And that being able to build some of the systems and looking at companies like Apple and looking at companies like Google and seeing that they're based in those areas, that was sort of a genesis of creativity and psychedelics and all of that. That's not a coincidence. And now that we start to look at sort of a holistic picture of psychedelics and how they fundamentally can allow freedom and allow for so much change, now we're looking at it outside of just the creative aspect of it, outside of what initially in the 1960s, the reputation of psychedelics was, and really look at it more from a psychotherapy perspective, looking at how we can actually change the world with these sort of ancient medicines and modalities. And importantly, people like yourself who are trained in this work, who can be on the forefront of having this become something that really has an impact in the world. So I'm super excited to work with you on this in any way that we can. And I'm super excited to have you on my show. I have one last question for you. You might think this is a leading question, but that's okay.
Okay, well, I like leading questions.
What's the coolest show you've ever played? What was like the rock star moment? Or maybe the most, maybe something that in the most forefront of your mind, but then you were just, it's the coolest time you've ever been up on stage.
Yeah, well, some of the times that were most transformative literally were like out of body, these experiences that were like, oh my God, this is life-changing. Those were just small gigs, right? It's just like just playing a gig and played hundreds. I don't know how many gigs I played, hundreds, if not thousands. And sometimes it's like the stars align and it could be playing in a cover band or something. It's just like, oh my God, I'm literally outside my body watching this happen. So that's happened, I think, 5 times in my life after playing all these years. But probably the coolest was playing like Radio City or some of these Coliseums or First Avenue or the Roxy, you know, some of these rooms that are iconic and like, oh my God, standing at the center of Radio City Music Hall and like, shit, this is fucking cool. Excuse my French there. And so those things that feel like they are these images in your mind and actually to be on the stage versus watching the stage, those felt like more kind of like, wow, this is cool. And more in an ego-y way where these other experiences were transformative because it was about the music. But both are in some way, the stuff we're transformed by the music is much more powerful than the things I remember. It's just, I do remember standing in front of the stage at Radio City Music Hall thinking, this is cool.
So yeah, wow. Thank you so much for coming on the show. If anyone is interested in learning more about MJ, please scroll down. All of his contact information, website is all down there. He's a fascinating human being who is doing some pretty miraculous thing in the world of psychology, coaching, music, and now taking on what is the third wave of psychedelics. So thank you for joining us, MJ, and I look forward to working with you.
Yeah, likewise, my friend. Take care.
Take care.
Thank you for tuning in to Off the Clock. Don't miss next week's tips around innovation and HR. Subscribe to the show. You can catch us on YouTube, Apple, iHeart, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Until next time, be kind and thrive.